This article is entitled The Power of Storytelling. On Easter Sunday, people across this church will gather in their living rooms or sanctuaries to hear the story of Christ's resurrection. The Easter story is our story, one of death, life, grace, and love. As we declare He is risen in and beyond worship, we echo the first disciples who galvanized Christianity by spreading the good news near and far. In this piece, hear from seven ELCA storytellers and why their art remains vital for us as contemporary disciples. We hope their reflections will inspire you to introduce others to the greatest love story of all time, the Easter story. First, we hear from Pastor Heidi Newmark. "Go tell," the angel commanded the women at Jesus' empty tomb, but they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. So goes Mark's Easter story, and while some boldly proclaim their faith stories, others, like these, are fearful women. Yet we might assume they found their voices, otherwise how would Jesus' story have come to us? Storytelling is a part of Lutheran's spiritual DNA. In translating the Bible, Martin Luther wanted to tell God's story in the language of those who had been left out. He wrote, "We must inquire about this of the mother of the house, the children on the street, the man in the marketplace. We must be guided by their language, the way they speak, and do our translating accordingly." The Bible is not just for them, the privileged elite. It's for you, including those on society's margins. The importance of "for you" in Luther's understanding of the gospel can't be overestimated. It's the heart of storytelling. When you share a story from your own experience, or how a stone was rolled away, or how grace worked a change in your life, then others who long to know that there is a real living word for them may be able to hear it. In Luke's gospel, the women excitedly run to tell their story and find themselves mocked or ignored. And this begs the question, whose stories aren't taken seriously in our congregation? Whose stories are missing or silenced? Who may decline from sharing a life-giving story because it won't be heard? We all need to share our stories, but those with greater privilege in our church must sometimes refrain from telling their stories and instead center sideline stories. You know, queer stories, Native American stories, Black stories, and more. There is a time for storytelling and a time for listening. The Word made flesh shines forth in both. Christina L. Diaz writes, "Stories like the people in them don't exist in a vacuum. In this world of complex intersections and colliding contexts, there are a plethora of connected stories. So I look for them wherever I can, because the more stories I hear, the more the world comes into focus and I'm able to see people better. And I think that's why I love photography so much, because it allows me to bear witness to the love and beauty of God in the world. As a portrait photographer, I experience a certain level of privilege in that I've been invited to take a closer look at an individual or a group. When families invite me to help them capture moments, the first thing I do is try to get to know what brings them joy. Then I find myself compelled to have them share their stories with each other. I'll ask a parent to remember when their child was small and could fit into their arms. I encourage them to pause for a moment to talk to each other. Then I capture what follows: the surprise, the nervous giggles, the tear-filled hugs, a physical expression of their love story. If I'm lucky, we experience namaste, which is a Sanskrit word meaning the divine in me bows to the divine in you. I often witness the divine, the image of God in others, and I try to reflect that in my work. When I think about sharing God's love story with the world, I try to follow the lessons I've learned in photography. I don't seek to be perfect. Instead, I focus on truly seeing those around me. I lean into the beauty of their stories, and I do not shy away from the harder moments, because without them, we are incomplete, and I invite you to do the same. Christina is a photographer and a multimedia storyteller from the ELCA Caribbean Synod, an assistant creative marketing manager for BJB Consulting. Next, we hear from Nicholas Butler, who is an author of four novels and a member of Trinity Lutheran Church in Eau Claire. When I was growing up within the walls of Trinity Lutheran Church in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, one of my very favorite pastors was Kurt Jacobson. Kurt began his tenure at Trinity just as I entered confirmation, and meaning we essentially grew up together. He is a young pastor and me as a defiant preteen, looking to poke holes in theology. But I did relish Kurt's sermons, his storytelling. Even from a young age, I sternly held that the crux of the service was the sermon, not the hymns, announcements, fellowship, prayers, or offering. The only aspect of a service remotely as important as the sermon for me was communion. The rest you could piece together for yourself at home with a TV, a Bible, and your family. But the sermon was the one time a week when I would be told a story and could actively interrogate my faith. Kurt understood that the most successful sermons join the biblical past and present seamlessly in the story. Searching my memory for favorite Trinity sermons, I recalled one of Kurt's circa 1987 that braided Bruce Hornsby's song The Way It Is with our responsibilities as Christians. Back then, FM radio was all there was for me, and that song was on heavy rotation. The song was unusual for its era, it's kind of late hair metal, because it was really a country story song with a progressive social vision. But it was also a parable. It was a genius way to build a sermon because everyone from church would later be listening to their radios for that song and its lyrics while examining their own Christian actions and beliefs. Kurt's sermon made us listen most closely to our world. During Kurt's tenure, there were other pastors that did not or could not, I couldn't relate to. I suppose this stems from the fact that I've always been kind of a harsh critic. Any pastor who took the pulpit to quote at length from scholarly text was far over their skis as far as I was concerned. They'd lost sight of the storytelling, which inherently, emphatically, is not a lecture. A sermon is a lesson disguised as a story, or at least the best ones are, and even kids understand this. Which is exactly the point. Next, we hear from Yehiel Curry, Bishop of the Metropolitan Chicago Synod. In November of 2020, I stood center stage at Philip Lynch Theater in Lewis University, Romeo, Illinois. The burgundy chairs, the smell of stale paint, and the taste of sawdust from recently cut wood transported me back 30 years to when I performed there as one of the writers, directors, and actors of The Struggle Is Not Over. The play, a potpourri of real-life stories from African-American students, became a sacred space in which many of us shared our journeys publicly for the first time. That experience was transformational. Indeed, the vulnerable sharing between us didn't end on that stage. In dorm rooms, at cafeteria tables, the conversation continued. The more we told each other, the more our stories became intertwined and the closer we became, so close that many of us remain connected today. Like the students at Lewis University, we in the Metropolitan Chicago Synod have started sharing our stories publicly in our newsletter series entitled Why I Came and Why I Stayed. The intent is to provide a platform for another meaningful exchange of real-life stories so that in finding out about each other, we might uncover or rediscover our collective self. And I think it's working. Thus far, lay people have learned that some longtime friends were not cradle Lutherans as they had assumed. Through story, rostered ministers have touched, tasted, and smelled the sacrifices of leaders who founded new ministries. Youth have learned about grace-filled experiences fostered at Lutheran camps and retreats that helped reluctant young adults discern a path to seminary. As we share them, these stories extend beyond our church communities. They're being shared again at work, at the salon, and in our community centers. Every time a faith story is shared, our journey with Christ's love in community is placed center stage. It becomes a venue where we can connect, become aware, learn something about one another, and discover ourselves anew. Our next story is from Richard Swanson, professor of religion, philosophy, and classics at Augustana University in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I'd been teaching a biblical seminar at Augustana University in Sioux Falls for years. We'd study a gospel of or origin stories, and my students would write a research paper. Out of 15 students, I knew what to expect. I would get 4 excellent essays, 3 would have the world land on them, and their essays would show it, and 8 essays in the middle would be competent. And this disappointed me. The stories of Scripture shake the earth, paint the heavens, reverse the flow of life and death, and such stories, I believed, should call us out more than competent writing. Then I was invited to be a storyteller at the ELCA Youth Gathering in New Orleans. The experience was scary and exhilarating. I came home and decided to use storytelling as the mode of engagement in my next biblical seminar. We studied the Gospel of Mark, emerging with scenes by performing them. When the mother heard Jesus say the children should be fed before the dogs, as she and the students winced. When the Gerasene demoniac woke from his violent fever dream, they breathed the freedom that came with calm. And when Rome crucified Jesus, my students stood with the woman who had followed Jesus and were now watching him die. They understood why these women came to wrap Jesus and anoint his body despite the risk. At the semester's end, out of 15 essays, a few still came from people dancing with disaster. Life is like that, but there were also 7 of the best essays I had ever seen. Even the essays in the middle were amazing. My students had not simply thought about the gospel, they had embodied it. Embodied storytelling changed the way I teach and study and think and write. The Bible is not a book of ideas, it's a book of bodies, bodies that live and die, that feel both hope and fear in the pits of their stomach. Just like everyone. Everybody, I owe these students a lot. Adrian Gary is Communications Officer for Communion Relations with the Lutheran World Federation in Geneva. She's a deacon and a member of the Lutheran Diaconal Association. She writes, "In my roles as a journalist and deacon, I'm called to word and service, or as I like to say, word through journalism. My first deployment was to the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Jordan and the Holy Land in Jerusalem as a communication officer and ELCA missionary for 4 years. Today, I serve in communications with the Lutheran World Federation based in Geneva. As a trained journalist, I know that word with little w is a practical means through which ideas, thoughts, emotions, reality, and the service of or work of God function through communications. Romans 10:14 defines this practical call for me. How then can they call on the one they have not believed in? How can they believe in the one whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? In historical missions, they are thought to be unreached, the non-Christian or the unsaved who have not heard, but in my call as a communicator, they are members of the church who have not heard. Have not heard what, you may ask? And my interpretation of Romans 10 is like this. How will they, the church, know how the Christ lives and breathes in our global siblings if journalists are not there as witnesses? Gathering and cultivating the glimpses of Christ's work among the LWF's 148 member churches in 99 countries is part of my call. We share these stories so that all may know of God's goodness and faithfulness. Lutherans around the world are Christ's living testimony. if we in the ELCA ignore the experiences of our fellow LWF members or are unwilling to hear, empower, and allow these stories, then Christ's message will be incomplete, fragmented, and a sketchy proclamation. By receiving their stories, just as the Word calls us to do, we reclaim the dignity of all and a fuller picture of God's global church. And we hear from Cheryl Anderson, a screenwriter whose most recent work is Sweet Magnolias. A pastor told me, after he had been chided for using too many anecdotes in a sermon, "Jesus taught through parables, why shouldn't we?" I'm a television writer, and that framing shook me. Why wasn't I looking at every script I wrote as a chance not just to tell a story, but to tell the story? And I love to tell the story. If I was striving to infuse every action in my life with faith, I should have been doing the same thing with my writing, whether I was crafting a family drama or a police procedural. In communication, when we instruct, particularly when we correct, the audience's first response is intellectual. I agree, I disagree, I didn't know that. If they feel admonished, they kind of lean away. But when we tell a story, the viewers respond first with their hearts. They laugh, they weep, they learn to lean in to know this world and its characters better. And they want to hear more. And this creates a marvelous opportunity for us, whether we identify as writers or not, to tell our own parables, to share the gospel in subtext. Not every story needs to feature God, but we can share His love through the tales of redemption, equality, and grace. We can show what happens when we neglect and love our neighbors as ourselves, or when we turn away the stranger. Classic works of literature are built on the failure to feed the hungry, whether that hunger is spiritual, physical, or emotional. The musical Les Miserables probably isn't the first title that leaps to mind when you think of faith-based art, yet prayers resound throughout the show, and the final declares, "To love another person is to see the face of God." Some years ago, I contemplated giving up writing and going to seminary, and as I prayed for discernment, God answered me in a surprising way. I sold a television pilot. Not only was my path forward confirmed, but I realized that if I taught through parables, if I wrote gospel as subtext, then I could share God with millions of people. And that's why the story is a part of every story I tell.